Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. Once again, joined by Sam Roberts. Sam, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm a little bit snotty. I'm a little bit head coldy. But you know me, Sam Lana. I am battling on regardless. So you know, don't let that stop us. I'm Benlined up. Other treatments are available, and we're pushing hard. Can I just start with an interjection that I had to myself in the bar at Bedford Blues? I just finished doing some post-match interviews with a player, and he stopped me, this chap, and I'm afraid I don't know his name, and he said, I would be interested in seeing you cover Sam Lana in Lard. That's what he said to me. So I don't know. I mean, we put it out there last week. There obviously is a market for it. He smiled, and it was one of those weird smiles that I thought, is he joking or is he being truthful? So, you know, the internet and podcasting into the wide world of the ether is very strange, isn't it?
It's interesting. I think there's a price. There's a price I would do it for, but... I suspect. Did the man look well healed, Sam?
He did. He did look well to do. I mean, and it's always those, isn't it? It's always them. It's always the ones you least expect, you know. So yeah, let's see what this episode can bring up as far as that sort of trade. Because I know we're going to talk about one of our favourite subjects, aren't we? Rugby law changes and exactly all that entails. Many listeners will have seen the various amounts of press and PR that's been going on about these law changes, and we're going to try and bring some sense to them. Well, I say that we're probably going to confuse you a little bit more, aren't we, Sam? Because
I think
it's a minefield. It's a minefield. It really is. What were your thoughts then on you know, generally where things are? I mean, there were some really obvious ones, like banning the crocodile roll. Of course, who isn't behind that, quite frankly? The horrendous injuries that are happening to players' knees and ankles. 100%. I mean, I assume you're behind that, yes?
Yeah, 100%. I am, yeah.
And then there are others which are a little bit more dicey, aren't they? How should we do this? How should we go through them? Do you want to go through them one by one? Do you want to? How should we do this?
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe it'd be good. Shall I lead them off? Shall I lead off what will the beers litting kind of verbatim here?
Yeah.
So there are six of these. So reduce conversion time. Conversion attempts limited to 60 seconds, aligning with penalty kicks and quickening game pace. So my interjection there, that previously was 90 seconds, I believe, for the conversion. So that's 30 seconds locked off. Good news. Completely agree. I know these need to keep it 90 seconds. Makes sense.
Should we get rid of the good news ones? Go. Yeah.
This next one, I think, is a good one. 30-second scrum and line-out limit. Scrums and lineouts must be set within 30 seconds, managed by the ref.
Yeah.
So I am almost without caveat in favour of that. I think so. I'm generally in favour when it comes to refereeing of there being a take in the piss law. So you kind of say 5 seconds, you know, that's your use it time. If you find yourself constantly reminding someone at the back of a ruck to use it, then you then clamping down. I noticed in a Bath game, I can't remember who they were playing, but Ben Spencer was taking a bit of time, and the referee said to him, "Look, Ben, just you got close that last time.
Yeah,
solve the issue. No need for penalties or free kicks. Just solve the issue like that."
And I think we're all behind that, aren't we? Because we want referees to, you know, if we've had a breathless 3.5 minutes with the ball in play, everyone's off their feet, everyone's breathing out their backsides. Yes, of course, referee, have a bit of sympathy for the next line out. Everyone gets those. So, you know, that one may be a little bit longer. We get it. But you're right. We should be, the mantra of rugby should be, let's get the ball kind of back in play, and let's do what we need to do. And that's not suggesting that the skill of line out and the skill of scrums should be diminished in any sort of way. They definitely all should be there, but we need to have less time with the ball not in play, and we need to be pushing on with stuff. And there have been flickers, there have been moments where certain referees have really got it, and in certain matches, and you're like, oh yeah, I like this, yeah, keep this going. And then the next time you see a game of rugby, it's not quite there, or it's not quite been followed through. So yeah, I agree with that one. Next one.
So I guess we're getting more into the grey areas of the ones we wholly agree on here. So I think I agree with this one. Play on in uncontested line outs. So play will continue if the ball is not thrown straight during uncontested line outs, reducing unnecessary breaks. So I've had fairly controversial discussions about something similar on Twitter, which is I'm basically fine with play on from forward passes where it's immaterial. So yeah. I would say if there's like a little pop, a little 6-inch pop on the line, which actually if you slow it down, if you replay it and you swing down 360, it goes marginally forward, I'm fine with those. I think play on, they're immaterial. And this would fall squarely into that it doesn't really matter. You've won the ball anyway. The question is, do we want to, is the skill, the conducting of the skill, how important is that? Because if that's really important, then you should penalise not straight. Whereas if it's not that important, you should, as they're doing, let it go.
And again, that's putting the sort of onus back on the referee to sort of see these things and sort of say, you know, is it important that I blow my whistle here because a law has been infringed? Or is it more important that actually we get on because, you know, there has been no advantage at all in any shape or form for anyone on the pitch for me to blow my whistle and have a scrum for a not straight or have another line out for a not straight. I agree with you 100%. And it's kind of, we're kind of facing a situation, and we'll talk about, I suppose we might have time to talk about the overall sort of arching sort of process here. Golf went through it a few years ago, didn't it? Where the rules had become so archaic within golf that somebody went, well, that's just daft. That just doesn't make any sense. Why don't you just let that happen? Just get on with it. And I suppose that's what rugby kind of needs to be really aware of, is that there will be some laws that are just a little bit daft. And maybe we'll talk about them, you know. And the difficulty is, you know, world rugby, I get it. You know, we want to continue to evolve. But I suppose that the real balance is, are we changing things, you know, because we feel as though we need to change things? And that's the balancing act. And, you know, I'm going to sort of throw a bone here to World Rugby. It is tricky. It is difficult to get these things right. This isn't easy. And we can only do that by potentially seeing the data and the analytics from what we put in play. So, yeah, I agree. What's next on the list?
Well, actually, just before we go into those, one thing I maybe should have mentioned at the start is these have been labelled, and let me find the correct terminology, fan-focused rugby laws.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that as a terminology, Sam?
Well, you try and get into the mind of the people who would be the opposite side of the argument, because we're both fans, and we obviously want the game to be as fan-attractive as possible. I suppose the argument is, you know, does the tail start to wag the dog? Because effectively the fans should be the output, the last thing that's placed. If everything else is great for the good of the game, then everything else should really, the fans should be happy, you know. And it is a dangerous thing that if you are just doing things for fans, you are on a hiding to nothing, because quite frankly, there is always going to be a group of fans who say, what about this? Or should we change that? Or should we do this? And that's what's tricky. It's a little bit like, you know, businesses who spend far too long trying to do what their clients want them to do, rather than focusing on what they know as their business they need to do to be a great business. You know, it's a difficult one, really. So yeah, I get where they're coming from, and it's good. And again, it's from a place of, I think, really quite, you know, there's a great deal of importance in that. But again, it's a balancing act. Yeah, do you feel the same?
Yeah, broadly, yeah. So I'm reminded of, so my hometown of Hebden Bridge, there's been a lot of drama this week. So they're removing some parking, which, as you can probably imagine, Sam, is a big deal in a small town Yorkshire.
Yes, no, so I shouldn't laugh. Yeah, carry on. Yeah,
it's serious stuff.
So how many parking spaces are being removed?
Well, I'm not actually sure, because it basically, for as long as I've lived here, and when I was a kid, so, you know, 32 years ago, there was parking between these two towns, so maybe about a mile apart, and you could park all the way along the road, and you probably get maybe 100 cars on really busy days on there. Okay. And they're basically banging that, you know, so you can't park on there.
Oh, so that's quite big then. I thought they were just like, you know, removing three of the end or something.
No,
like,
it's quite significant. Yeah.
Oh no, I can see. I can see there might have been uproar. Yes.
There's controversy, and one of the issues is there is controversy on opposite ends of the spectrum. So you've got people who don't like people coming to the town because it increases the prices, makes everything busy, but nor do they like parking being taken away. And those people often are the same people. You know, they manage to, what's it called, cognitive dissonance. They manage to have those two completely contradictory ideas in their head. And if you purely base everything you did on what people like that think, and I don't think they're the minority. I think a lot of us have that ability to want two completely contradictory things at one point. You would end up taking away parking and then pulling it straight back a week later because actually now there's not enough parking. And now you pull it back and now there's too many people visiting the town. So you take it away. So you just end up going back and forth on that. I do think we're at risk of doing that in Rugby, where, and I think the fans should be listening to a certain extent. I think there's a lot of stuff that fans have. And I would consider myself a fan. I'm not being kind of from a higher angle there. So I would consider myself a fan, but I don't think you should listen to everything that I want because I will want something slightly different to what you want and maybe vastly different to what someone else wants. And I think if you try and appease a group of fans who want this, you risk, you know, taking away from a group of fans who don't want this. But also what you risk is making the fans believe that basically as long as they make enough noise, the game will just change to suit them. And I do think that is a significant risk. And you do sometimes have to be a bit single-minded and just say, this is what we're going to do. This is the best way forward. And we kind of don't care unless, you know, numbers start deteriorating massively. But most cases they won't. Most of the time, this is just people who want something to talk about, which is fine. But that's generally what we're looking at here.
And like I said previously, this is what makes it so difficult for World Rugby. It isn't just a case of, you know, because you've got some spurious data in there that is coming from people, as you say, that have a slightly different agenda than what they're going to market for. And that's the difficulty. That's the difficulty that World Rugby have, most definitely. And let's face it, this is another fantastic barroom conversation. You know, what laws need changing in everyone will have an opinion on the laws of rugby and what needs to change. So yeah, I think it's a tough job. It really is. Where how long before we get to 20 minute red card?
Oh god, well actually that's not even on one of the six. No, so that's not, gonna be the not. Seventh one. So let's rattle through a couple. This is the one that I'm broadly in favor of, even if I'm not entirely sure how this is going to work. But protection of the scrum half, enhanced protection for the scrum half, scrums looks and mauls encourages fluid open play. The way that the game's being reffed at the moment basically means if you tackle a player and the nine gets there first, more or less that's the nine can't really be touched as it stands. So I'm not sure if they're going to change that or if they're just going to kind of change how referees interpret it, and make sure it's standard across the board. To me, nines are more or less unencumbered at the moment.
I've not watched a game of rugby and gone, that nine needs a bit more time. I've not really. Have you ever done that? I mean, that was one of the ones. And I'd also like to throw into the mix, you and I have played a fair amount of rugby in our time. I'm sure our listeners have played a fair amount of rugby in their time. And, you know, obviously not including scrum halves in this conversation, and apologies if you are a scrum half, but generally speaking, the scrum half I've known have been really annoying and have definitely needed touching in a big way throughout the game, just to keep a lid on them, quite frankly, because they're a very special breed of individual, aren't they?
They are. They'll let themselves get away from themselves if they're not putting a little bit of a box. So,
I'm not sure about that one. I'm not sure that needs a little... But maybe that's one thing that we might see. Maybe we're wrong, and maybe we'll see a slightly better game version of it. I don't know. We'll see.
This is one that I am on the tipping point of not in favour of, but I can see it working. Single stop mauls. The ball must be played after one stoppage in a maul. Currently, it's two. So often the referees will say, okay, that's stop once, stop twice, got to use it. This will, as soon as the forward momentum stopped, or as soon as they are only going sideways, it will be use it. I mean, this will depower them all quite a lot.
What I worry about with these, and you're probably very mindful of it as well, is are these sort of things made by people who don't understand what mauling's about? I mean, I don't really, but I've spent enough time with people who really do understand mauling to recognize that it is a complete art form. And actually, you know, making it stop after one isn't, it's like calling a boxing match off after four rounds. It's like, well, hang on a second, that we've only just got going, you know. And I think there'll be a lot of forwards who are like, well, you know, actually that secondary push is the most important one. That's the one we were getting ourselves into position for during the first one. That's what we were doing.
I agree. I think there's an overall risk here that people think, and lawmakers think, and some of the general public think, if you take away kicking and you take away mauling, what you're left with is like just a beautiful free-flowing game. Nope. But you're not. You're left with a kind of a Exeter plus 15 phases, one out lunging, because why would you, if you can't kick, why would you drop anyone deep? If you can't maul, how else would you suck everyone into that one space?
I'll tell you what that's like, Sam. That's like taking parts of the orchestra away, saying, right, we're not going to have any timpani, right? And you're like, oh, yeah, but timpani is quite important. Or mauls and kicks, timpani and fiddles, right? So we'll take away the timpani, we'll take away the fiddles. And we play, and we can play music, and it sounds quite good. But actually, some music really benefits from timpani and really benefits from fiddles. And just because they're not being used or they're not used in the right way, it doesn't create the full spectrum of colour and music that we want from our sport. And you're right, because we don't like them, because the timpani player is particularly, you know, brutish and horrible and doesn't, you know, sort of buy his pints, we go, well, we don't like that. We don't really understand him. So we'll just get rid of him. But to get rid of him, you lose the depth and the darkness and the colour that is that end of the orchestra. Does that make sense? Sorry to cut in, but that's in my mind is what we're doing here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you've got to be very careful the moving any part of the game. Like, imagine if me and you were put in charge of field hockey. I suspect neither of us know too much about field hockey, but we could watch a game and go, oh, it takes a bit of a while to get ready for the short corners. Let's just strip them away. They're not worthwhile. What we would miss is actually there's a load going on that they are responsible for, either directly or indirectly, which we're not aware of. Mm-hmm. And you get a little glimpse of that with some of these law changes, that there's a sense that someone else, perhaps from a marketing company, has come in and gone, I think there'll be needs a little bit more zhuzh, a little bit more va-va-voom, and they've gone, well, the bits with the least zhuzh, we should get rid of, unaware that they've got their fingers in all other parts of the game. Yeah. And it's not as simple as strip them out and leave.
Yeah, I think the game would lose something. Certainly, the mall would lose something. As I think I explained there, you would miss that crucial part. Again, I've not really thought it was broken. I've not really thought that part of the game was something that needed changing. There are plenty of bits that do. That's not one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. This one, I'm not gutted by this. I just find it completely bizarre. It's marking inside the 22-meter line. Players can now mark the ball inside the 22-meter line from a restart, encouraging more contestable kickoffs. So, obviously, you can mark in the U22 from more or less anything, including penalty kicks, but previously not from kickoffs. You can now do it from kickoffs, which we've seen a few examples of so far this year. I have no idea what the purpose of that is. I mean, obviously they've said, I've got no idea why that is beneficial.
No, I commentated on the England or Black Ferns game at Twickenham a few weeks ago, which had this law being utilised in it. And there were three or four maybe, even kickoffs, really deep into the 22, which were marked and then booted out. And I cannot tell you the palpable sense of, what the fuck? just around the stadium. Everyone went, "What? That's weird." You know, I just don't. You're right. I mean, I get where they're coming from in the sense that that you're trying to get more. I get that bit. But what happens is because it's a free kick, they'll go, "We'll kick it deep." They'll kick it out. We'll take the line out. Thanks very much. because you get the line out from the free kick. So it's bizarre. They haven't thought about the end bit, which is they're more than happy to kick it deep, take the line out, and when we'll restart. It's like restarting with a line out. That's basically what they're doing. And so, you're absolutely right. It's flummoxing, that one. It really is. But there we go.
You know what they should do? And this is what I never understand is so often it's the incentive or what they're trying to do is one thing. And they think, we can't do that. It's too obvious if we just say, do this thing.
Yeah.
So they create a secondary rule, which exactly as you say, so whatever the outcome is, you're not going to tap from your own 22. Or if you are, you're very unlikely to go far before you then kick it. So all you've really done is you just pumped a few more wasted minutes into a game.
Yeah.
If this is something that is really concerning, and to be honest, I don't think it should be, but if this is something concerning, just make a rule that says the ball has to land between the 10 and the 22.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then it's a scrum at halfway. And you just get everything you want without just immediately slowing the game down if someone does kick long.
Yeah, it can't be that simple, can it? Is it? Maybe it is. Are we?
I mean, it makes you wonder, isn't it? I mean, have we just missed something, or is it actually that simple? Just on a slight side issue, I was speaking to someone who was involved in the law variations when they put the goal line dropout in some. And I hadn't really considered this as a factor, but one of the things they were pointing out was that they had hoped that it would lead to more kind of rugby league scale kicks in the opposition 22, because teams would have been, you know, knowing that they couldn't just go over the line, they'd be more willing to do that. So upon hearing that, I thought, I wonder if that's true. So I had some looking today. Do you know what's happened to kicks in the opposition 22 in the two seasons before and the two seasons after the goal line dropout, Sam?
Well, I would hope that, as you say, that it has improved things. But you've got a glint in your eye, Sam Lana.
That might just be my natural glint.
Put your glint away.
I can tell you this. So as a percentage of kicks, used to be 4% of all kicks happened in the opposition 22. That's now dropped to 2%.
It's gone down.
It's gone down. It's halved. And you might think, well, okay, maybe there's just more kicks. And so actually it's not that percentage of dropping real numbers. Well, there used to be one kick a match in the opposition 22. Now there's 0.6. Oh. So it's basically half. So what they had planned. Now, I must admit, I'm actually in favour of the goal line dropout. But
yeah. Can I put a caveat in there? I do get a bit annoyed when it's a kick that's gone long and it's over-egged and it's gone behind the goal line and they tap it down. I want the kick to have meant to have done it rather than accidentally done it and be penalised. I feel that's a little bit harsh. I think that should be another 20.
I broadly agree with that. I remember playing a match quite soon after that, and the referee hadn't fully figured out what the law was. And so one time we kicked from our own half, the wind was behind us and it just went completely dead. And so obviously that should be a scrum back where we kicked it. Except he gave us a goal line dropout, or gave them a goal line dropout. They were not happy. We obviously kept scrum. Shortly afterwards, we kicked the ball and it bobbled in the goal line. And then we chased hard and they just dotted it down. Mm-hmm. And that was giving us a 22.
Right.
So that should have been a goal line dropout. And then next time we were held up over the line, and that was giving us a 22. So it was varied. You never quite knew what was going to happen. By half time, it was clear that someone had pulled him to one side and told him what the laws were, which hadn't fully worked because then he did implement the laws, but in only the second half. So it was incredibly confusing what had happened. But I completely agree with you. I think a long kick, you kind of should be punished for that not with it going all the way back, but with a 22 dropout, as long as it doesn't go dead. But
You know the ones I mean, the ones that actually just take a really firm bounce around the 22 meter, end over end, and they end up going a bit further, and the guy just drops unintentionally, sort of, you know, because he's being handed, drops it down. You're like, oh, that just doesn't seem to be very fair on the defending side. But anyway, but we'll see.
One positive, if I can just on the stats. So in those two periods before goal line dropouts, after goal line dropouts, possession starting in the opposition 22, now there's only a try 30% of the time. Previously, it was 25% of the time. So actually, there's a feeling, I think, that it really punishes attacks. I think in some ways it does, but I don't think there's been an overlapping issue really in the game. I think that still attacks are rewarded sufficiently for it. So I'm broadly in favour of the goal line dropout. I think this mark in the 22 is just... is mad.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Just explain, because as you quite rightly point out, this tranche of law trials changes, it does not include the 20 minute red card. That is on a menu somewhere, though, isn't it?
Yeah, so let me read the Wallaby message about that. So actually, I don't think I've got what they exactly said. So they are moving, I think, in the direction of 20-minute red cards. So I guess here we go. The executive board also endorsed updates to the television match official protocol, empowering officials to spot clear infringement in the final phases before scoring. A simplified red card process featuring standardized sanctions and the ability to replace a red carded player with another player after 20 minutes was also supported for further elite game trialing after successful initial trials in World Rugby competitions. So it's not been brought in, but it feels like that's the next thing.
Yeah, and how I was about to say, how do we feel, like a royal we? How do we feel about 20-minute red cards? Because I have to say, I'm still a little bit uncertain, and I'm willing to be swayed. So do you want to try and sway me?
I can't sway you in favour of them, I'm afraid, Sam. I am absolutely firmly opposed to 20-minute red cards. I don't know. None of the logic seems to make sense to me. So one of the discussions that red cards are too much of a punishment. Well, if you look at the games that have red cards in them, they do lose more often than they win, but it's not drastically. It's around about the difference between being home or the way. So if you get a red card, it's essentially you'll win as often as if you were the away in a away team. So it's about 56-44, around that kind of margin that you would lose if you've got a red card. So it doesn't seem like a particular big punishment for me. The other factor I think that people bring up, which I do have a little bit more sympathy with, is that it's an inconsistent punishment. So after 1 minute compared to 70 minutes, it's a different punishment. Which I think is true, but I think that there's lots of things which are inconsistent. You know, for example, if I make a poor tackle, if I go high on someone 5 minutes from their own line, and if I go high on someone 5 minutes from my line, one of them will result in a penalty try, one of them will result in a penalty kick to touch, probably given back to us after the couple of phases via the kick.
Yeah.
So rugby's full of inconsistent punishments. And then the third one, which I hear a lot about, is that it's too much of a team punishment for an individual error. Ultimately, it's a team game. So if you mess up, the team deserve to get punished. The other week when Ollie Hassel-Collins dropped the ball over the line for Leicester,
exactly.
It's not as if the ref goes, look, he's made a mistake, so I'll only give you 4 points for the try. You know, we've come to terms.
Well, of course it is. And I was going to say, kicking a goal is exactly the same. You know, it's an individual skill, and you need to be able to, you want it. Your kicker doesn't turn up and doesn't make any conversions. As a team, you lose out. I mean, it's an interesting one, that. Can I throw my two pennies in and just sort of say about, what's weird is I'm watching a lot of Championship rugby at the moment, which, to all intents and purposes, is just as it won't be quite as fast, but it's just as physical as the Premiership in a number of different ways. But we don't have any TMO recourse. We have nobody in the game that will stop it and say that tackle's a little bit high or that tackle was a little bit. So we have referees having to eyeball situations. And lo and behold, most of those, a vast majority of those, are not called. I was watching Bedford versus Hartbury at the weekend, and there was two particular tackles that I thought, if we had a TMO here, they'd be looking at that, they'd be slowing it down, they probably would have judged that that shoulder is too high, it hit the player in the head, and we would have a stop in the game, and we probably would have sanction. So I suppose my question is technology almost becoming a burden or a difficulty that rugby has implanted into itself and is now having to utilize and therefore probably finding issue? And you speak to players, and the amount of players who are frustrated with, and you know the particular tackle I mean, yes, and there'll be lots of people screaming at their podcast saying they need to bend low at the waist. But these are not people who are intentionally doing it. These are people who are just getting it fractionally wrong. It's being punished at the Premiership because of TMOs. It's not being punished in the Championship because they don't have TMOs. Not because the tackle is the different. It's because they don't have TMOs. Thoughts, Sam?
Yeah, I agree. I think that was always one of the things with football where they didn't want to bring in VAR because they felt it would be too different from the grassroots, you know, what it's like on Hackney Marshes.
Yeah.
There is definitely a discrepancy between high tackles at grassroots level and how they're refereed at the elite level. And so I do think that's a challenge. I think that TMOs, the issue we have, I think, as a game is that we have so many ways of watching and slowing it down that what always happens after the international games, what was so bleak during, at some points, the last World Cup, which I thought was brilliant, and the South African Lions tour, is that you watch a wonderful game and you get the usual discourse afterwards that so-and-so was rubbish, the refs stole it, so-and-so was amazing. But what we get now is on Tuesday, we get 40-minute videos of everything that the referee got wrong when time is slowed down. And I think that is one of the most tedious side effects of this one game.
Yeah.
Sam, I think we might need to wrap up there because we should point people towards the excellent Charlie Morgan, who we had on Monday, who was fantastic. And people have really responded well to that. So thank you everyone who's already listened to that. And we have the also excellent Dan Cooper, who is the analyst at Bath, who will be excellent, but we are about to go and interview him. So
I was going to wrap it up and say I don't know whether we've solved anything for anyone on those law changes other than probably added a little bit more murk to the puddle, quite frankly. But we shall see. Send in your responses, give us your ideas, give us your thoughts on what we're saying, most definitely. And as Sam says, definitely listen to the Blindside episodes, either side of us. They are absolutely cracking. But for now, that's all from us on the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.